Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Buffalo Bills Maybe Next Year, a podcast. My name is Frank.
I'm Scott. I'm Paul.
Look, I have a feeling that when we discuss the game this week against this past week, we're going to say it was there's not going to be that much impressiveness. You know, we're not going to be that impressed. And so, you know what? We're just a podcast. It was just a game against the Browns. What do you want, right?
Like, yeah, no, we're 170 podcasts in. Yeah, Michaela Maroney will be our special guest on this
podcast. Exactly. She is not I love Michaela Maroney. I don't know why I love her. I just do. Probably because of her face with the thing. The Bills steamrolled the Browns. I can't actually find the score because the website's slow, but it was like 33-13. I think we had said 31-13, more or less. Pretty much, I know at one point I did say a text saying I think the Bills could lose this game, and that was in the first quarter, and I think that was true in the first quarter. But they pulled it together. They outplayed the Browns. Congratulations. And there you go. Paul, let's start with you, because you probably have better thoughts than Scott.
And that's the norm, yes.
Right, and we'll let Scott
pick the game correctly. I make in-depth observations, and then I pick the game next game wrong that Scott picks correctly.
Right, and then we'll just let Scott rail against whatever you say.
Right.
But, you know, 10.5 point favorites, they win by 20. Give me your thoughts on the Bills-Browns game.
You know, it was, like you guys said, it's tough to really be impressed with this game. They did what they were supposed to do. There was absolutely no way we could come out being impressed by the Bills in this game. We could have ended up being more disappointed than we already were, but you know, there was no sort of moments where here's what we learned, which is really nothing. LeSean McCoy is a very good running back. I don't know if you guys had observed that the previous, you know, season and three quarters that we had to watch him, but I felt that was kind of obvious. So, you know, we learned that about the team. We learned the defense tends to play a lot better when their opponent is one of the historically bad teams offensively. I believe the 15th worst in the last 40 years by advanced metrics that they've been using lately. So that was, you know, we learned that. You know, I'm looking back at my tweets right now. If you were following me on Twitter on Sunday, one, God bless you. Two, really, that might not have been the best decision because I'm just not finding a lot of depth or observations among my tweets about this game. It was, you know, the Bills did what they should. Kudos to them. They kept it alive. Most importantly, at the earliest possible point in the season that they could have done this, they have clinched finishing between 7-9 and 9-7 again this year. You can't do that until week 14. You have to be, or after 14 games, you have to be 7-7. And the Bills have clinched that. So congratulations on that. But otherwise, you know, good for them. They beat the team they're supposed to beat. Now let's see what they do against Miami.
Just to put a number on it, 19 carries for 153 yards and two touchdowns for LeSean. Plus, of course, adding in the receiving, which was, yeah. So a very good day for LeSean fantasy owners.
Yeah. But by the way, I did make the one observation. McCoy got to 1,000 yards in the 14th game. O.J. Simpson and a 14-game season rushed for 2,000 yards. And the Bills still had two backs that season who finished up near 500 yards. So that was just craziness. Of course, I believe Joe Ferguson's final stats for the year were 983 yards passing, which Tyrod has about three times as many.
Yeah, but I don't know. That's a good question for the offseason. Who's better, Tyrod Taylor or Joe Ferguson? I think that they were both asked to do a lot. You don't have to respond to this, Scott, but I'll couch it this way before
I'll
kick
take
it over
a prod.
To you.
Sure.
Robert Griffin, 17 of 28 for 196 yards. Tyrod Taylor, 17 of 24 for 174 yards. Griffin gets sacked five times and Taylor only the once, and you do have to add in Taylor's rushing yards. But, you know, Taylor gets a 105 QB.2 QB rating. Griffin gets 81.8. They didn't really have that different of a day in my mind. Like, they were both kind of like, Griffin definitely had some terrible looking throws, but
And RG3 did pull the Tyrod versus Pittsburgh move of piling up some stats during garbage time there.
Right, absolutely. So with that, what do you think of the game and Tyrod, because you know what? We're going to end up talking about what we all think of Tyrod again this week, because that's all we're allowed to do.
Well, we have three topics to talk about: Whaley, Rex, and Tyrod.
By the way, I don't know why we expect the Bills to do anything different when we don't do anything. It's not like we're sitting here deciding to talk about something else. We're right. just gonna like fucking beat the same drum we always beat.
We're break down Jordan Mills again.
Right. Okay.
We're a Florida Panthers terrible. Podcast now, so that's gonna be our focus.
Exactly.
Yager, how does he do it?
Yes.
Your thoughts on the game.
Maybe next slap shot.
Right.
The Taylor. I mean, that's kind of the point of the whole offseason, isn't it? Is can you get Tyrod Taylor level performance without paying someone $15 million and use that $15 million on making the rest of the team better? And obviously, you look at this game, and again, the Griffin padding the stats, I think, is fair. I think Griffin obviously has a lot less receiving talent to work with, given that Duke Johnson was his number one receiver. With 5 catches for 62 yards, and if I'm not mistaken, I think he's a running back, or at least he was maybe in college. I think he was the Miami.
I don't even know.
He has 5 carries for 31 yards, so I mean, he's not.
Yeah, that would do it then. Yeah, he's the Miami running back. Yeah. So that kind of tells me that they don't have a lot of like wide receiving talent to stretch the field. Terrell Pryor, obviously a quarterback at Ohio State, and he's done some nice things for them at receiver, but certainly no one to be afraid of. They basically traded away all their good players. So asking RG3 to go out there and do a lot better is kind of, you know, not that great. And then you have Tyrod, who, you know, again, certainly not asked to do a lot in this game. And that's kind of the thing with him is, you know, the game plan is designed for him to get, you know, a 75% completion percentage, you know, score in the red zone once, not take any sacks, not turn the ball over, mm-hmm. run for a couple first downs, and that's what the game plan is. So asking him, grading him against Tom Brady or somebody isn't fair to him, because that's not what they're asking him to do. But do you need to spend $15 million on a quarterback to do that? There's an argument that there is. Because you can, I mean, RG3 has had many worse games than this. This is, at this point, probably an average game for him. So,
right.
on some level, it does make sense to pay the $50 million, which is, again, low for a QB salary. Like, I forget what the number is, but it's definitely in the bottom 15 of QB salaries next year, if not the bottom 10, for what we'd pay to keep Tyrod for the next 6 years. And then you avoid having to go into the, you know, the Ryan Fitzpatrick 4 interception game that costs you, you know, a game that you otherwise would have won. But you're also, acknowledging that you're not going to have someone who's going to be able to, you know, bring you out of the funk per Roethlisberger or Brady or, you know, Drew Brees or Aaron Rodgers on a good day.
This is good. If you don't mind me cutting off, I think
no one wants to talk about this game. So
good. Great. So we'll just, I think let's just jump into the Tyrod Taylor talk then, and then we'll circle back to 3 stars.
Yeah. The rest.
Anything else that stuck out? Cause I think you're right on one level, but I also look at that and I say, well, can I get Matt Moore to kind of do that? Or can I get, you know what I'm saying? You're right. Like, it's sort of cheap in comparison to other big contracts for quarterbacks, but it's still a lot of money that's tied up. And it's not just 1 year. It's once you buy next year, you're buying 3 years. And so I think I even said a few weeks ago, like, you know, I was trying to be comfortable with the idea of spending more than I was comfortable with Taylor under the pretense that we would then draft other quarterbacks. And like the idea was, you know, if you ended up with the Dak Prescott thing where you had this rookie and this other, you know, the rookie who was doing the production wasn't the quarterback that was getting paid. That's not really my problem. It's like the Pegula's problem, and it's not even really their problem because they're getting good quarterback play. Yeah. I think you're right. There is an argument for keeping him, but the more I see this, the more I just think like, can't we get this elsewhere? Can't we get, like, is Robert Griffin tied down to Cleveland? Like, how much worse would it be with him? How much worse would it be with Colin Kaepernick or Matt Moore? Or I don't know. I have to see who are the 2017 free agents.
There's not much there. Mike Glennon's name has been coming up.
Right. Mike Glennon. The problem with Tony Romo is that he's like Tyrod next year in that whatever he does, the Cowboys are going to end up paying him 18. There's no way they can get out of paying him like $14 million a year, and then it's dead cap money. And so, you know, like that,
I think
that hinders the ability to trade him. Plus, by the way, Tony Romo probably gets to pick where he wants to go. So 25 quarterbacks, and then Paul, I'll let you wax poetic once I read these names. Kirk Cousins, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Case Keenum, Sean Hill, Matt Schaub, Matt McGloin, EJ Manuel, Blaine Gabbert, Matt Castle, Mark Sanchez, Brian Hoyer, Geno Smith, Austin Davis, Kellen Clemens, Dan Orlovsky. Jesus, Dan Orlovsky's still in the league. Josh Johnson, Ryan Mallett, Christian Ponder, Mike Glennon, Thad Lewis, TJ Yates, Kellen Moore. So both Kellens, Kellen Moore and Kellen Clemens, Matt Barkley, Ryan Nassib, and Landry Jones. Those are the...
So one, disappointing how many of those are former Bills quarterbacks.
Right, at least three.
Yes. Soon to be.
Orlovsky is with the Lions. I feel like we discussed this recently, too, because Orlovsky went all around the league, and now he's back with the Lions.
Manuel, Lewis,
Fitzpatrick.
Castle, and Fitzpatrick. That's four. So four ex-Bills quarterbacks.
Soon to be ex-Bills.
Right.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, I think that's the thing is, I mean, is there a premium to get better that's the thing, like, are we getting better quarterback play than those guys with Tyrod?
Right.
And I think the answer is yes. I just don't know if that's worth the premium that you're paying to get a lower end starting quarterback. It's kind of like if I'm buying a car, like, is the Volkswagen a little nicer than the Ford? Sure. Is it worth another 10 grand?
No,
probably not. Like,
right,
at that point, I might as well just pay an extra 20 grand and get the low end Benz. And then, you know, at least I'm driving something a little nicer, or at least I can claim it's a little nicer. I don't even know if these cars are nicer. But,
well, let's ask Paul. Paul, which one are you driving?
You know, I'm usually going to drive the lower end vehicles, you know, from someone who literally drove a 2000 Ford Escort until it died a year and a half ago or so. That's generally my thing, but my take is more when I look at, you know, and this is what the point I brought up with Tannehill in the past and others, like $15 million for a Tyrod Taylor. It's just, it was the same thing with Fitz's salary. You can't really pay a quarterback to be mediocre. And I feel like I would, and this is the dynamic that I find hugely interesting. Fitz held out forever and eventually saying, I should get 12 million. Eventually the Jets gave in and gave him 12 million. Did them no good as a team. The Texans were saying, well, even though this guy got benched for Peyton Manning about Brock Osweiler, we'll give him a huge deal. And then he failed spectacularly, and he's now their backup quarterback after last week against the Jaguars, mind you, is when they'd finally seen enough of him. And it does mean you can't resurrect it. I'm really interested to see what happens to this quarterback market, because I think when you look at Fitzpatrick and you look at Osweiler, who are the two biggest names last year, the names this coming year aren't going to be much bigger than those. Let's get rid of Kirk Cousins out of that conversation immediately, because he's either going to get franchised or the Redskins will get him on a long-term deal. But the others, I don't think a lot of teams are going to be bidding high for any of those guys. I think you can probably bring one of them in for maybe $7 million, save yourselves $8 million in that position. And then let's not forget the possible Romo trade that a lot of teams will be seeking, which would be a great fit for the Bills, which have some talent on offense that just need them to get them the ball better. So, you know, so many interesting things. Listeners know, though, Scott and I were two of the biggest fans of Tyrod at the end of last year, support him throughout this year. After watching specifically the Oakland game and then the Pittsburgh game, that largely soured it, you know, soured him for me. So.
It soured him for me, too. Like, it really is sort of, I don't know if I'm ready to sign up for that. I organized this list by passing touchdowns, Cousins with 23, Fitzpatrick with 10, Case Keenum with 9, Hoyer with 6. So, I mean, it's not a great list. It drops off very fast. And
well, and you also don't know how many stats these guys are, or how many starts these guys are getting.
Right,
are
it's a little
season reps. Because, I mean, Tyrod has 14 touchdowns through the air, at least. I don't know if that includes his rushing touchdowns.
Right. Case Keenum has 9 touchdowns in 10 games played. I mean, so, and Hoyer, 6 games, 6 touchdowns. Barkley, 5 games, 6 touchdowns. I mean, it's obviously not the best metric, but...
Well, and Tyrod, basically 15 games and 14 touchdowns.
Right.
So
you know, plus whatever he gets
games and 14 touchdowns
rushing. EJ Manuel, by the way.
Plus 6.
EJ Manuel, Geno Smith, Matt Barkley, and Ryan Nassib, all 26 years old. So they would be the youngest quarterbacks if you were looking for somebody to work with. How much? Yeah, EJ Manuel is definitely worse than Tyrod Taylor. I'm trying to think, and you're right. I think looking at this free agency list, it's 20. You know, I'd say Cousins. I wouldn't even say Fitz. It's hard to say. Like, Tyrod Taylor is probably the second best quarterback on this list. You know,
yeah, and that's what it is. That's exactly what it is right now.
Right, and if you don't take him, you're asking for him to walk because he'll go somewhere else. He will go to the Jets because the Jets will pay him instead of paying Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah. So it is frustrating. I don't know. Yes, Frank, what do we do about this?
Well, what we do first of all is we do three stars for this game, and okay. then we come back because we ask Tyrod Taylor's future, weirdly, as we seem to have maybe talked ourselves into keeping him, at least at least for the case for it. Are we going to talk ourselves into keeping everybody? Because I think slowly that's what's been happening. But let's
12 angry men of
that's right. I was in that play. I was in that play, and it sucked because I was juror six, and I had like two or three lines, and you had to. But unlike most plays that where I had no lines, you had to sit on stage the whole fucking time. And be doing something.
And be in character.
Right. You had to be doing something. And
you had to be the tree. Yeah.
Right. Oh, it blew donkey balls. And it was such a long play. But it was rewarded because later I got the better parts. And I ended up, you know, by the end of high school, was doing the big parts. But
we're going to come back to Scott's later.
And now you know, Frank, most of you don't realize this, but Frank is his name for the podcast. His name is actually Ryan Reynolds.
That's right.
So this was very, very clearly a good decision on his part career-wise to stay with the patience of being juror number six and 12 angry men.
It's time to make skills. It's time to make the chimichangas, is all I got to say to that. Scott.
This is a deep pull, Frank.
Yeah. From all the way last year, right.
So your three stars for this evening are fairly easy. So the honorable mention, though, goes to longtime fans of the podcast probably will not have to think too hard about who this would be because it is a Cleveland Brown. It's not Joe Schobert.
It's
Wisconsin.
It's the other.
It is, however, Joe Thomas, the left tackle for the Cleveland Browns, who frankly didn't have a great game. He had a holding call. He also gave up a sack to Lorenzo Alexander late. But Joe Thomas gets the honorable mention because he's a Hall of Famer and he showed up and played in this game.
Yeah.
And if I was a future Hall of Famer,
Cleveland Browns too, which is not easy to do.
Certainly not easy to do in the last 40 years. And if I'm Joe Thomas and I'm getting paid, you know, $4 or $5 million a game or whatever it ends up being, I don't know what he's getting paid. And they're 0-14 and I'm still in a contract for another 2 or 3 years. I'm going to take the rest of the season off. Like, congratulations guys. We tanked and we got all these great draft picks coming up. That sounds like a great plan. I'm all for it next year. I'm going to take the rest of this year off, but he didn't do that. He showed up and played on Sunday. So that's why he gets an honorable mention. Yeah. And so Homerism aside, we will now move to the other part of Homerism, which is my Bills Homerisms. And we will move to Charles Clay, 7 catches for 72 yards, 1 touchdown, as someone I think astutely pointed out on Twitter. I forget who, but it was like something along the lines of great debut for Charles Clay in a Bills uniform.
Yep, that was hilarious. The Suplex City pointed that out. It was, yes, great. Charles Clay doing well in his Bills debut.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's nice to see him in the offense. And it's kind of like, again, if we're in the defending Tyrod kind of seeing how this all comes together kind of thing, it's like, you know, and again, it's the Browns, so you can't really take anything too much. But it's like, boy, he's got some kind of dynamism when he has the ball in his hands. And it's like, if he could get the ball more regularly, he would be helpful in the offense. Like, it would be nice to see that. And there's certainly, you feel like there's enough weapons here that things would be interesting, but clearly we're 7-7. It can't be that interesting. Some of it, obviously the injuries and such, but we can talk about that more later. Second star, I gave it to Lorenzo Alexander. You could make a case for Kyle Williams being your defensive kind of star of the game. Kyle, obviously 4 tackles and 1.5 sacks. Lorenzo, however, 10 total tackles, 1.5 sacks. Lorenzo just, again, going against Joe Thomas for a lot of that game, but certainly did more than held his own, continuing his kind of strong Pro Bowl
season, yes.
I was going to say, him and LeSean, so shout out to them.
Yeah, exactly. And his, as you guys know, his second Pro Bowl, because he already made it once, but just as a special teamer, which is, again, kind of the bizarre kind of miracle career of Lorenzo Alexander, that as basically someone who is literally 19 days older than me, making his first Pro Bowl appearance as a defender, 30, you know, almost, you know, 10 years into his career. But anyway, moving on to, what am I on? First star.
Oh, right.
Care to guess who the first star is, anyone?
Sean Jackson.
Oh. Mao Zedong.
That's good. Very good. Very good. Yes, it is. It is LeSean McCoy. Three catches for 16 yards, but also the 19 carries for 153 yards, two touchdowns. Again, I don't think we've had more first star. I don't think anyone of the Bills has gotten this many first stars in a season.
Since the inception of this podcast,
probably not. Again, Pro Bowl performance again from LeSean, and again someone who also could have very easily pulled a hammy and not made it to the game this week, but certainly someone who was out there trying to win for the team, win for his teammates, win for Rex, win for the Bills, win for himself, win for, because he's being paid and he's professional. But certainly a winning performance from LeSean McCoy. And those are your three stars.
Thank you. And I want to talk about that for a minute, because he's really been a joy to watch. We've mentioned this before, but in a dark season. And really one of the reasons that I hesitate, he's the biggest reason I don't want to have a rebuild season next year, because he's excellent and he's so much fun to watch. And it would be completely unfair to, that feeds into the discussion we're going to have about Rex Ryan and Doug Whaley here. And really, a guy like him and a guy like Kyle Williams, who are towards the end of their career, closer to the end than the beginning at least, are playing very well. And LeSean better than anybody. And to have them have to go through a rebuild is sad, and I think on a level for me morally wrong, and it's just not okay with me that he would have to endure a wasted season or two of football. It would be one of those things where I would not be mad if he insisted on a trade if they were clearly doing something like that. He's been excellent. He's been so much fun to watch, and I want him to succeed, and he's also not just fun, but he's good and makes the team better and is something that should be used in that capacity, in my mind. And as I kick this over to Paul, feel free to talk about LeSean McCoy, or feel free to go into the next part, which is also, this is the second week in a row we've heard about Rex Ryan possibly getting fired and they're moving on from him. But as it's sort of, for me at least, it's lost its bluster a bit. I'm beginning to now believe this is manufactured a bit from the outside. And yeah. I've come to believe it is being leaked from somebody in the office who doesn't like him. But I don't think that the Pegulas really are there yet. And I'm wondering if it's even a good idea to fire Rex Ryan, but I want you to start this conversation. Feel free to start with LeSean. Feel free to start with Rex, however, yeah, or Doug Whaley, however you want to go into the off-season move.
Yeah, and I think they all lead into each other well. And in case people are wondering why we're talking so much about the off-season, it is essentially here. I just want to remind you people of that. We're not going to obsess about the playoff talk, because the highest odds you find out there are one.
If everything breaks this week for them and they win,
yes,
next week we will have
right
playoff prediction palooza, and we'll do it. We'll commit to it.
I won't even do that. I'm not going to do that. I refuse to do that. If we make the playoffs, we'll talk about it.
Right. If all falls well this week, which for those of you keeping track at home, I believe is something like the the Bills win, you need Houston or Tennessee to lose to inferior teams, preferably both. You need Pittsburgh to beat Baltimore. You need the Colts to lose, if not this week, next week. And then you need, there's one other game in there I'm not thinking of. If all those things happen, Frank and I will talk about the playoffs next week.
Because what happens is the next week is the Bills would have to win and five teams would have, we'd be rooting for five teams to lose.
Right.
And Scott might not want to talk about it, but I think that deserves mention based on the sheer insanity of where we would be.
Right. But we'd have to also root for the Patriots to lose at home this week to the Jets just so they have something to play for against the Dolphins the following week. So,
you know,
all sorts of craziness. But on the LeSean Rex Whaley talk, I think that's the order in which, you know, I will go. LeSean is a dynamic player. We talk about this week in, week out. I don't think you can over-talk about him because this is the first time the Bills have had what would qualify as a superstar in many, many years. And you can talk about the great players like Kyle Williams, like Aaron Schobel, like, you know, Jairus Byrd in his prime, Brian Moorman, the punter. Those were all great players. None of them are superstars. They have a superstar in LeSean McCoy. He's under contract for a number of years, and he makes these games entertaining to watch in a way that they haven't been in years. I have also find myself leaning toward the, and Orlando's going to kill me on this, on the leaning toward keeping Rex because, you know, as Terry Pegula said at the owners meeting a couple weeks back, or maybe it was just last week, you know, you're never going to get anywhere, whether it's, you know, drilling an oil well or trying to build a winning football team by changing things up every 2 years. And you look at what really makes me think Rex almost deserves another shot, the team's best players, you know, LeSean, Kyle Williams are coming out publicly, and Sammy too, coming out publicly and supporting Rex Ryan. They do not have to do that. They can say, you know, we understand it's a business and whatever the team decides, it decides. I'll keep playing for Rex and he's fine. But they are all, you know, largely coming out unanimously. And when your top players are saying, we like the coach, that makes me think maybe that's not where the problem is. And yeah, I think this is, and Steven brought this up on Twitter is one of his questions. Keep hearing Rex on the hot seat. Sure, Whaley makes at least as much sense to dump. No rumors about him, though. But now those rumors are coming because look at the Charles Clay situation. For what you are paying him, $6 million this year, I think he's $9 million or $9.5 million on the cap next year. That's a lot of money for a non-superstar player. Marcel Darius, your top cap hit right now will be your top cap hit next year if you don't extend Tyrod, if you don't pick up his contract. He is, his game without Kyle Williams is largely nullified. He's not doing much. Gilmore, good, very good cornerback. I think he takes a lot of flack, but he's not Darrelle Revis in his prime. You know, he's not a superstar guy. Jerry Hughes, another guy you're paying $7.575 million to be a fairly good pass rusher and decent run defender. You know, there's a lot of big contracts out there where, you know, you have a lot of money being taken up and you're right up against the cap by players who are not superstars. That is why McCoy at his 7.675 cap number is the bargain. And I think where, you know, it needs to be looked at is Whaley. He is very good with the middle of the roster and the bottom of the roster and with professional scouting, but he has a history of not hitting on any substantial draft picks and also of overvaluing his own players on the market. That is my LeSean to Rex to Whaley take if we want to kick it over to Scott for his thoughts, which is actually Frank's job. So I'm going to...
No, it's good. Scott, Paul is advocating basically to keep a bunch of people here. Go for it.
The frustrating thing for me is that you want to... What you really want to do here is you want to go back in time. You want to go back in time and... stop Hitler. Number two, you know, probably, you know, kill Stalin while you're at it, just because he was kind of a jerk. You don't want the Russians taking over.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of people in history you have to kill before you get to about 2014 in the Bills. However,
right, or just supply kind of like, nonstop condoms to these people's parents if we want to not be too.
Yeah. Well, you know, again, you never really know how things are going to turn out, but the only way to make things sure is to kill them. That said, we can discuss morality and time travel later. The Bills, 2014. The problem is Rex Ryan was the wrong coach to hire. The problem now is that we can't change the fact that we might be close to something here, but we may not get there without potentially uprooting everything that we've gained along the way. So the point is that Rex Ryan was built in to fix the defense. He clearly has no value added on defense. He clearly has no value added on offense. He is essentially, at best, a neutral coach, when really, ideally, you'd like to have a coach who's actually bringing something to the table. Game management. I mean, maybe the thing Rex is bringing to the table is that people like playing for him, and that makes them play better. Okay. That's a little something. Maybe it's more than I'm making it right now, but I'm not seeing enough of that to make me feel like he's the guy. The problem is that if you get rid of Rex, then it does feel like you are starting over. And you can't fire Rex and bring in Rob Ryan to coach the team. No one's going to believe that it's not like Rex Ryan, like Rob Ryan wouldn't do that. You know, I forget who our real defensive coordinator is.
Dennis Thurman.
Thank you. Is also not going to go for that deal. Similarly, we already fired Greg Roman. I'm not even sure Anthony Lynn is the solution here of someone who has interviewed before for NFL jobs, and it would make it seem like the problem is not with where the team is going. The problem is simply we don't have the right coach, and we need a better coach.
Right.
Now, I'm not sure that Anthony Lynn is a better coach. The offense certainly has done nothing in the Oakland or Pittsburgh games to make me think that he is a magic man and has a lot of answers, but certainly at least he has the potential to add more than Rex Ryan does. The problem is that even with Anthony Lynn, I think to a certain extent you're kind of saying that the players who have bought in on the Rex Ryan idea that this is the way we're going to win this team is going to fail a little bit. And I don't know that you're going to be able to keep everybody on board. And then that'll affect your free agency re-signings. It affects your drafting. It affects everything else. And so I'm not sure that we could pull that off. So I guess if we fired Rex and went with Lynn, I think I'd be okay with it. I think I'd be more pleased with that than just firing Rex or just keeping Rex and rolling the dice again. I feel like maybe I've come to a decision in my head in the last 10 seconds that maybe that's the way to go. But, and I'm, in terms of Whaley, like, you know, I mean, obviously people know I don't think he's done great for us. I kind of have some problems with some of the picks he's made. And, you know, though that said, you know, it's like I'm reading one of the criticisms and they put it on Buffalo Rumblings. I forget who did it. It was somebody on MMQB. And it was basically like, well, if they didn't find Zach Brown on the scrap pile, they didn't find Lorenzo Alexander on the scrap pile, where would they be right now? And it's like, well, but they did find them.
They did. Yeah. And those were great. Those were great pickups. That's why I mentioned
they were great pickups.
His pro personnel scouting, I don't think you can question that. There's a reason he was in that position for the Bills, you know, right, before he became GM.
Yeah.
He knows his stuff there. But yeah, you as our draft guru, and then, Scott,
it's not a lot of success. And then you also go back to where would they be now? And it's like, well, would they be better than 19th or 17th or wherever they are now?
Right. Maybe they would have drafted different people or signed even better people. Like, we might
exactly
be, or maybe they wouldn't be signing people to huge contracts that sort of, you know, maybe a different GM would have had the foresight to say, you know, maybe Marcell Dareus isn't the best guy to offer X amount of money to. Not that I'm saying that's necessarily a mistake, but like there are plenty
like of one now,
right? If you can't sort of isolate the one from the other, like the mother of necessity is he needed to find people like that. And he did, which is good, but he also kind of painted himself into that corner where he needed to do that. Go ahead.
I was just gonna make one more Hitler reference. The same kind of crazy that makes Hitler, you know, just say to Luftwaffe, you can take Dunkirk on your own. We don't need to have the army come in and wipe out the English. The same kind of crazy that makes him make all these bad military decisions is the same kind of crazy that got him into the job in the first place.
Yeah. Right.
So it's kind of like you can't take one without the other.
Right. I think that we should all take a moment to lament the fact that Buffalo Rumblings continues to slide down.
Yeah, boy, I was there. I corrected them on something on Twitter for the second straight week, and not one of those opinion things, but a factual. No, that is misleading. That is not at all the case here. So
yeah, they really have,
and they've got a couple good writers who analyze like Tyrod's, Tyrod's performance play by play, and but overall,
I think that's Nate Geary who works for WGR anyway, and it's like, it's really been disappointing.
Yep.
It's been super disappointing. So I'll leave it. You know what? I don't know if anybody rights on there or whatever.
Yeah, no, I can tell you some of our listeners do. I've seen them comment on Buffalo Rumblings. And again, we have often said that's a good source for us, too. We used
it
to
was.
Podcast. We would go to the site and be like, okay, let's double check Buffalo Rumblings, make sure we're not missing anything we should be discussing in our agenda. But now
they also used to do they used to do the web rumblings, too, where they'd go yep. and do like a list of all the links. They don't even do that anymore.
Yeah.
That's just paying. I don't know. Are these guys? I assume the editor is getting paid. Are the writers yep. getting
paid? The writers get paid too. I believe the writers are paid on almost a stipend
scale or whatever.
Yeah, it's not very much. It's like you're sure. right.
But again, the problem is really with the editing, frankly, which is what has changed, which is Galliford being gone. So.
Yep. Right. It's sort of just the direction is kind of shit. Sorry. You know what? We were happy to heap praise upon Buffalo Rumblings when it was good. And we now need to correct that because we have probably sent people to that website. And now I feel bad about it because maybe in a year it'll be better because maybe they're still finding their footing. But
those one or two people we sent to the website,
right? All two of them, all those
four. Stop listening to the podcast now.
Yep.
I am sort of in the boat with you guys. I think the biggest problem with Rex Ryan for me is that the defense is terrible. And I heard somebody this week, I forget who it was, somebody who used to play for him, talked about how you need strong safety play in the Rex Ryan system, and that without Aaron Williams, that's a huge problem. And so, you know, you could envision Rex Ryan saying, look, two of the three guys I drafted didn't play for the entire season or most of the season, and I lost Aaron Williams, and that really is a huge deal. And we need a safety. And it's like we can get this on track. It's closer than it looks. And I could see them saying something like that. And I think you could look at I think we're already making the arguments for Tyrod in that you don't want to throw away what is, you know, like they're probably going to be a 500 or better team this year. They're going to probably win one of the two next games, if not both. And, you know, so you're talking about firing a coach who would have at least, you know, I forget what Doug Marrone's first year was, but he finished 9-7. And so you're talking about firing like one of the most successful coaches in the last 16 years in Buffalo, to be honest, as piss poor as it feels, because it really feels like they should be taking the next step and they aren't. If you're going to fire Ryan, I want to fire Whaley too.
Yeah,
I do.
And I was giving you the numbers earlier, and they're even worse than I thought when I look at 2017. Jerry Hughes' cap number, $10.45 yeah. million. You know, the only one that you save a lot of money cutting is Kyle Williams, who's making $8.3 million, but his cap savings would be $6.8 if he's cut. He's the one you don't want to cut. He's
right.
the one who's showing up game in, game out, and being a star player. And I just look at these salaries, and, you know, Corey Graham making over $5.3 million next year. This is
right.
This is a sign of overvaluing your own players and screwing yourself with a cap.
Now, that might be in part due to the Buffalo market and just saying you need to, just like we kind of might be with Taylor, where you say you need to pay a premium to have people play here and to stay here because it's not a glamorous market and it's also just not a winning team. And so you have to sign that for the Nats fans on the podcast, that Jason Worth contract that signals to the rest of the league, like, hey, we're serious about paying people who are good or paying people who want to play here. And maybe that's what that's in service of. But if you look at I just have the draft up. I mean, Lawson Raglan didn't play. Washington has been good. Cardell Jones is admittedly not ready to play. Jonathan Williams, you know, has been in 8 games. Colby Listonby hasn't played, and Kevon Seymour has been in 13 games but hasn't done all that much. But that's not bad for a 6th-round pick. But then you look at Darby, John Miller, Carlos Williams not on the team anymore. Nick O'Leary seems to be like an okay tight end for a 6th-round pick.
No, he's not. No, he's not. I mean, for a 6th-round pick, yes, but that's most 6th-round picks are out of the league, so...
Right, like, so the manager...
The team.
Right, the fact that they've cut Nick O'Leary twice and he's, you know... found his way back on the roster because no one picked him up, says Vines. But he's, let's put it this way, for $615,000, serviceable number two tight end.
Sure.
So I'm cool with it.
Watkins, Quanjo, Brown, Cockrell, Cyril Richardson, Randall Johnson, Chauncho Hundred. And of course, Sammy Watkins is the reason why you don't have a first round pick the next year. Like, that's not that impressive. It's not. Even if you go to the year before, Manuel Woods, Alonzo Goodwin, Duke Williams, Jonathan Meeks, Dustin Hopkins, Chris Gregg. Like,
yep. flipping Alonzo for McCoy. That's the accomplishment of
that. That's the big deal, right? Like, he was smart enough to know that he wanted a dynamic running back instead of a potentially injured linebacker. And so if Ryan's going to go, I want everyone to go, but that really hurts because I don't want to, you know, then I do. I want to say, LaShawn, we're sorry. Where would you like to go? Would you like to go? And I don't care what we get back from him, because at that point, like, I just feel like you've got a moral obligation to send a player of that talent to somewhere where he can win. I think it could be, you know, I know Tom Coughlin's name was floated around. I've heard that he would prefer to play in Jacksonville. You know, and I think that you just look at Ryan, and it's weird. The quarterback is the problem, but they score, you know, they're scoring enough points that they should be winning more games based on what a Rex Ryan defense is. And the Ryan defense isn't holding up, but you've just scored us, like, your options are to scrap everything or triple down now on the hope that it actually is just a personnel problem still and he can fix the defense. But I don't know. If they fire him, I won't be mad. If they keep him, I won't be mad. What I don't want them to do is a half-assed job. What I want them to do is either clean house or stick it out another year. And I really want them to try and explore something else at quarterback, even if it is like if they keep everyone and don't draft a quarterback this year in like the third round or better, I think I'll probably really be really mad about that.
Well, real quick on that, Frank, but I mean, we already have Jones, who has not proven that he's going to be capable of ever starting an NFL game, let alone like being a professional backup. Right. Don't you feel like we kind of have to get at least a veteran kind of quarterback in here at some point, or are you in favor of just cutting Jones and trying rolling the dice again with another quarterback?
Well, you're already going to free up a space with Manuel leaving. Although,
so who's going to be the project and who's the backup?
Right. The thing is, like, E.J. Manuel is probably better than most backups you're going to be able to sign.
He knows the system, and he knows how to hand the ball to LaShawn.
We're keeping E.J. too.
See, I think maybe you really push Whaley now, and you say, this is it. This is your year. Either Tyrod Taylor saves everyone's ass, or you find me a quarterback that can play football. Because if you can't do it this year,
it's the playoffs, yeah,
you're done. Everybody's out. If you draft another Cardale Jones, bag of dicks, get out of my office, and everybody's gone.
Features now.
Right. And if you want to draft two quarterbacks that way and say, great, we'll take, you know, it kind of worked out for Washington, right? Like they went first and third round. And if you want to do second and fourth round or third and fourth round or third and fifth round, and like, you're going to get two quarterbacks, one of which you think can maybe play football, you know, then that's what I think you do.
And Washington looks like geniuses because both of those quarterbacks inevitably led them to division titles. The high round one in his rookie year, and then netted some picks on a trade, and then the other guy last season. So
I'm convinced now that's the way to go after quarterbacks, because they never come up in the free agency market. And you either have to Jameis Winston it and really like aim for the first couple of picks. But then you might end up with Jared Goff, who, by the way, is still not playing in Los Angeles somehow, because he must be that bad, right? Like, what is there to lose by playing Jared Goff right now? Nothing. So, you know, you either put them all into that basket, or you do the shotgun approach, and you just get a guy every year until you find one that can play. And you don't skimp on it, because it's such an important position that when you hit on it, it will matter. But I think we should leave that here, because there will be plenty more weeks to discuss this because I'm sure this week another national reporter at noon will find on Saturday a reason that
Rex Ryan may be dismissed by the end of the season.
Right. They are strongly considering the possibility that maybe they will discuss whether he should retain his job or not for next year. And you know what? Schefter will lap it up. And Tim Graham, who also has gone down a backslide a lot with me, will also lap it up, and they will enjoy it, and they will beat their drum, because that's what a good story is just drama. And you know, I sort of don't blame them. It's a terrible team to cover right now. It's all disappointing. Nothing as fun is happening other than LeSean McCoy. And so why wouldn't you want to like cover something kind of sexy like that? But I think it's irresponsible. And I don't really believe it. I don't believe that people, I believe it's coming from Doug Whaley's office. I believe Doug Whaley wants Rex Ryan's fired. And because he thinks if he hires the coach, because he doesn't hire the coach right now, he's like on equal footing with Rex Ryan. And if he could hire the coach, it would all be fine and everything would be okay. And if Doug Whaley wants to say that because he wants to now have a passing offense and get rid of this ground and pound horse shit, then maybe I'd give him another year longer than Ryan. But let us save that discussion for another day because we have gone on long enough. Let's do the Facebook and Twitter questions. The Facebook questions, Steven wants to know the last time the Bills threw a screen pass.
And they did throw a tight end screen this past week to Charles Clay, which netted about 7 or 8 yards.
There but you go.
I can't remember last time, you know, his little dump off.
The Chan Gailey era, probably.
Yeah.
Our offensive line is too good, you guys.
Right.
they're just too good. And so the blockers never get off the linemen, so you can't ever run a screen because the defensive linemen are just – all they can do is hold on to our offensive linemen, which really slows down the screen. So
Brian does not follow college football at all. Any idea who the leading prospects at our neediest positions are? He lists receiver, safeties, quarterback, linebacker, cornerback. I think the top three are right. I don't know if they're in the exact right order. I think maybe
I'm not sure I put receiver in there.
I think they need a receiver. I don't know that they're at the top with receiver. But
I feel like, I mean, safety and corner, like we can talk about neither.
Sorry, quickly. I don't want to say that that's what Brian's saying. They very well may have just come in his head and now we're.
Exactly. I don't want to like insult one of our listeners on the air, like by name.
Right.
Though I think I have done that before.
Brian.
but I mean, if
as one,
I mean, it's early to talk about people because obviously we don't know, you know, we'll have the bowl games for a little bit. We'll have the pro days and everything else. It's obviously, you know, the biggest thing is whether just people are coming out or not. Mm-hmm. But I mean, there's definitely plenty of defenders. I mean, I think the secondary is obviously kind of the biggest concern at this point. I think you really have to think about whether Gilmore, whatever his name is, and Darby are the guys because we're certainly paying them. We're planning on playing both of them like that. Clearly, I don't think Gilmore and Darby are both going to be on the team next year because
right.
Didn't really worry work this year. So you have to think about cornerback a little, but you also have to think about safety. But yeah, receiver, I don't know. I feel like I'd rather take another linebacker at this point because frankly, the thing that I was most concerned about on Sunday was it looked like Zach Brown and Preston Brown looked bad. Looked like they had taken a step back from earlier in this year when I feel like they were playing downhill. I felt like they were always trying to running to catch up with Crowell and some of the other people who were running it for Cleveland. So I'm not sure about linebacker, frankly. And then I always go back to offensive line until we have a right tackle who's more effective than Jordan Mills. Yep. Then that's going to be the weak link of the line that people are going to attack. So for me, my top three are.
It was kind of a sexy idea. Sorry to interrupt, Scott, but this could be a good off-season discussion. Is like Cordy Glenn is a good left tackle. Cyrus Quanjo can't play right tackle. He does okay on the left. Do you start your five best guys, which would mean moving your best offensive lineman, who's a left tackle, to right tackle with Cordy Glenn, and just keep Quanjo on the left because he can do that capably? Discussion for another day, but I just wanted to throw it out there.
Okay. Eric Berry, unrestricted free agent at safety. Just saying. Maybe we go after Eric Berry, get us a hell of a safety,
yeah,
and not pay.
Yeah, that would be... Give that money. Get Gilmore money to Barry.
Yeah, and then if that's a really key position for, you know, Whaley. Yeah. But again, an off-season discussion. The answer to Brian's question is no. We don't really quite know yet what to make of and who to talk. But you know what? It's the bowl season. Every night you can watch some terrible, fucking football game, and scout a player. Yes. So
I will say this. I will put my marker down right now. Don't draft Jabril Peppers.
Okay.
Don't do it. I think he's overrated. I don't think he's that great. I think he's going to be one of these guys who kind of, they built the entire defense around him at Michigan, and he's certainly a good athlete, but everybody in the NFL is a good athlete. You need to be better than that. Mm-hmm. to kind of be a difference maker in the NFL. So I'm going to go ahead and say, even though he's the top ranked safety, according to McShay, like I wouldn't draft him. So there.
All right. Any Twitter you want to bring up, Paul? And then when you're done with that, just let's go to this day in Bills history.
I'll keep the line moving. So David notes Shope on WGR suggests the Bills should tank next year. Seems like it would be a waste of talent they have now. Thoughts? My thoughts are with you, David. And I think we'll all agree on that. There's no real purpose in tanking when you have a superstar like LeSean McCoy. You have some other players. And also the whole tanking talk, more of a ratings plug, because there is no... And it's, you know, whether you believe it or not, and we could go into what's going to happen with Cleveland. We don't know how it's going to turn out, other than they can go in 16 this year. And hockey, you talk about the teams that have tanked. Edmonton has had some success this year, but still no playoff appearances. Same with the Sabres in the NHL. So I just, there's enough talent on this team. Like, you don't have to get rid of everyone. You can save $22 million by not picking up Taylor's option, cutting Carpenter and cutting Corey Graham, and none of those moves are going to have a huge influence on the team. We'll argue about Taylor in the offseason.
I'll just quickly say...
This is a group question.
Yeah, no, I would say that you hit the nail on the head that, unlike a sport like hockey or basketball, you can't really predict how good a player is going to be in football. Like, you can really identify who the blue-chip players are. And so for me, it is a valid sort of strategy, rebuilding strategy. Tanking to me too specifically is like you're purposely losing games as opposed to cutting as much payroll as possible and understanding you're not really going to compete, field a competitive team. So I think in those sports where it's one or two players really make a huge difference and you can identify them with like 85 to 90% certainty, it makes a lot more sense. Whereas, you know, the first overall pick in the NFL, look through it. I mean, it hits as often as it misses, and you can't rebuild a team wholly that way. The other thing I'll say is, if you really want to rebuild a team, it's not going to kill you to wait one more year. It's you can have another go at it like this, and maybe everything breaks right for you, and people don't get injured. Because it whether you start this year or next year, we're talking 1 year's difference, and you know then you're a year closer to the end of a guy like McCoy's contract, and it's just like, you know, you're wasting a little bit of less time.
Yep.
In that way.
Absolutely. Moving on to Orlando's question. He notes where Sammy Watkins said it takes passing to win games. Why does no one else see this? Why? Orlando, that's very true. And I would agree with you. I think that's why we're all ready to move on from Tyrod, or at least contemplating the idea of moving on from him, because he's not a good passer, and that is really hurt what Sammy can do. Sammy had his best season under a guy named Kyle Orton, you know, and yes, you can say statistically was better with Taylor last year, but you know, when fewer games with Orton, he did really just a phenomenal job.
I think that speaks to the problem we're having is that you don't want to, like, if you don't hit the quarterback lottery, like, do you just fold up tent and not play? I think that's the problem, Orlando, is that I think they do know that. I think they're hamstrung because they know they don't have a guy and they don't have access to a guy who can throw. And so I think part of the talk is, you know, just sort of to build up the team the best way they can and to sell it that way. Yep. You know, I think if they had Tom Brady, we wouldn't be doing this ground and pound bullshit. I think it would be throwing the football 50 times a game. And, you know, so they just don't have it. And you can't go to the quarterback store, unfortunately.
I wish it existed.
Right.
Ryan, and this is directed at you for last week, Frank. Stop clicking your effing pen, ! There was a stretch where Frank was clicking his pen excessively.
I will stop eating my pasta now, too. Okay.
And stop rocking in your chair, too.
Another Frankism, the chair rocking. I forgot about that.
You guys never tell me this.
No, but this is. I think it's because it's we're never charm. Sure.
Thanks for telling
it.
Me at the end of the fucking podcast, too.
Here's why it was funny last week is because I knew it was when Scott was talking and he got thrown off a little bit by the clicking pen, and I knew it wasn't me. So I'm like, oh, that's got to be Frank on the clicking pen. But it's
you all
hilarious.
Suck. I hate all of you.
Ryan also had the hilarious observation when someone asked how long.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I just say Ryan also had the interesting observation he posts when someone asked how long the Bills have been in the hunt. Post a photo of the older woman from the Titanic movie.
Very nice. Very nice. I will endeavor to keep my ambient noises down, and thank you for bringing them to my attention. If my co-host could mention that before the podcast starts next time, I would do an even better job. So,
but it's, you know, it's the it's really a test to see if people are listening. And when they notice the pen clicking, they're listening. So kudos to you, Ryan. Steven notes, you know, Clay, Goodwin, Hunter, McCoy, Felton all had more receiving yards than Woods and Watkins, talking about the Cleveland game. All but Felton had more than both combined. That's a problem. You know, we need to get more wide receivers involved more. That goes to the QB talk we will have later, not today. And then Orlando notes, you know, we really should take our show on the road sometimes. We've talked about that, and we definitely would love to do that.
We have done it. Yeah,
we did in Buffalo. That's true. We've done Buffalo. We've really done the pod in a variety of locations in various apartments throughout Washington, D.C., throughout homes in the suburban Virginia area.
It's true.
We'll do what we can. But that covers most of it. Thanks, everyone, for participating last week. I was a little bit fewer people than usual. Ryan, Nightbeat Ryan and Shapes Enabler Ryan were both very good. Orlando and I. But for the first time, it was largely just Orlando and I talking. But kudos to Brian and Jesmyn and the usual crew for stepping in. Nice chatting with you guys as always.
Bills.
And our colleagues at Bills and Peers, who also made some good, you know, we have some good interactions during the game.
That's nice. I'm glad we get along with them.
And they also
we have a new person to hate too, the other podcast, which shall not be named.
Right. Yeah. We're not getting up on the new guy.
We're not going to name them. And there was, I will say, I do want to give one shout out to Bills and Beers, who, when they posted their podcast for the week, said, if you're looking for clarity on the Bills' future, you've come to the wrong podcast. So we are simply would like to reiterate the same with our own podcast.
Yes. Right. If you're looking for clicking pens in the background, man, oh man, if we got you covered.
Right. So I'm supposed to roll now into this day in Bills history very quickly, correct?
All right. Then we'll move on to the Dolphins game.
Right. So I looked at a few games. We had two big victories over the Dolphins today, which would have been appropriate to cover, but I would choose not to. In December of 1990, it was a 24-14 win that brought the Bills to 13-2 and clinched the division and, you know, offset a 30-7 loss to the Dolphins in week two of that season. It clinched the division for the Bills. This was a Frank Reich special. Frank Reich off the bench with Kelly injured, came back, got some touchdowns with Lofton Reed, won the game. Yay. The 2013 game, I remember fondly because they shut out the Dolphins 19-0 in a game that me and about four other people throughout the world watched because it was blacked out here in Buffalo, and I watched it alternatively, let's just put it that way. And I remember this was a game where it was good to see Thad Lewis and the defense step up and shut out Miami. But it's time to talk about some depressing official playoff elimination games. So we're going to go back to December 22nd of 2002 in a game on the road against the very impressive Green Bay Packers. And as I did with the last week's game where we talked about the collapse against the Jets, just how the win probability changes, I want to talk about the first two series of this game, whereby the Bills kicked off and Green Bay started the 26, following a run for a 3-yard run. The Bills, Kevin Thomas, intercepted a pass, ran it back 31 yards to the Green Bay 9-yard line. A couple plays later, the Bills throw an interception in the end zone. That is how this game went for the Bills. Drew Bledsoe was the quarterback. He would be sacked not once by Vonnie Holiday, not twice by Vonnie Holiday. Anyone want to guess how many times Vonnie Holiday sacked Drew Bledsoe this game?
I think it was 7 times.
You are scarily close. It was 5. Ugh. 5 times he sacked Drew Bledsoe, and that will lead into our trivia question later. The Bills also had a very unfortunate happening later in the game where they were only down 3-0 magically. And, you know, Travis Henry had a tough day. Others had a tough day. The Packers scored, had a situation where it was a pass to Amon Green that was clearly caught and fumbled that Nate Clemens picked up and was running back for a touchdown, and they blew it dead. And this was 3-0 game in the fourth quarter. The next play, Brett Favre touchdown pass, 10-0 Packers, game over. So that was, you know, Brian Moorman was the real hero in this game. Remember, this was his second season in the league, so he did not have ESPN's respect yet. So they say Bills punter Mike Moorman, whoever that is, caught a gust of wind. His punt sailed 84 yards to the Green Bay 2. That was really the highlight of the game for the Bills, was the 84-yard punt. But this is that game to bring up because the Bills had playoff hopes on life support at this point. This officially dropped them to 7-8. Not unlike this team, they would win their finale to go 8-8. Hilariously, if the Bills had won this game, they would have stayed alive and been eliminated next week, but it would have made the entire AFC East 9-7, and that would have been just amazing. Wow. The Jets ended up being the team that got in on the tiebreaker.
That was the year where they were all 9-7, and then they were 8-8. I remember that.
Yep. And the Bills were that close to being a 9-7 team, and this was that game, a very winnable game that they disappointed. So I mentioned earlier, and this will lead nicely into the trivia question. Vonnie Holiday set the Packers record with 5 sacks, breaking the Packers record of 4.5 sacks in a game by this former Buffalo Bill.
Oh, well, not Reggie White then. Okay. Well, the only former Packer who played for the Buffalo Bills that I can remember was James Lofton. So I assume James Lofton, the wide receiver, must have fumbled his way into 4 sacks. I would also like to say I remember this game because I was home for Christmas, and I have a tradition. I had a tradition when I went home for Christmas to not really watch this game because, like, the premium on time with my mom was sort of – my folks have, like, not had cable, and they don't really watch much TV. And so, like, it's sort of like a whole to-do if I want to watch a football game at home now, which sounds kind of weird. But more importantly, I just prefer to go out. I listen to the game on the radio, and this was a game I was half listening to on the radio, and then we were in Sears, and I stopped, and I watched, like, the drive that you just talked about where they fucked it up on the 9-yard line. And so I just remember this game because I was getting it in pieces throughout the afternoon. But I'm going to say James Lofton because that's the wrong answer.
I'm going to say Ray Liotta.
Mm.
Oh, man.
And potentially also Bryce Pop.
Oh, good combination. You know, they're both good fellas. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Liotta had a 3-sack game for the Packers before he went over the Bills. He never really had that Vonnie Holiday type of pedigree.
Okay. That's probably what it was.
But in fact, it was Mr. Bryce Pop.
Nicely done, Scott.
And then he came to Buffalo shortly after that point in time and won AFC Defensive Player of the Year for the Bills in the mid-90s. Played for them for 3 years, was an exceptional linebacker. I believe he ended his career in Jacksonville, and I would have to look him up. But, yeah, it's very well done, Scott, as always, with the right answer.
Always gets it right.
Pretty much. And that is this day in Bills history.
150 for 150.
The Bills.
December 22nd, 2002.
The Bills are anywhere from 3 to 5 point favorites over the Dolphins, my friends.
This means there are a lot of this. And by the way, and not a coincidence, recreational marijuana legal in a lot more places.
Yeah, that's right. That said, you know, Matt Moore played well last week, but no Ryan Tannehill. They're coming north. It's going to be cold. It's going to be Bills football weather. How do you see this game playing out? I guess I'll go. I haven't gone first at all today. I think the Bills are going to win this game. I think they're going to win this game 23-20. I think that there's a good chance that Jarvis Landry is hit on the ground and there is more than one penalty for hitting him very hard. I don't think they will let J.A.J. embarrass them the same way. I think they're going to force Miami to pass, and I think they want to do that because they also want to put the hurt on the guy who basically ended Aaron Williams' career, maybe. So I think the Bills are going to win this game. I think they're going to do one for the Gipper here, and they're going to win a close one, 23-18. But Paul's been talking a lot. Scott.
Yeah,
Scott.
I haven't shut up. Let's get Scott.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't feel good about this.
Strong
game.
Take.
I feel like did kind of have our number in that last game, and I don't feel like I've seen us really been able, like, even in this Cleveland game, we didn't do a great job of stopping the run, frankly. I mean, we did an okay job, but I mean, they just kind of got away from it because we were scoring at a fairly decent clip. I feel like there's just too many holes on this defense, and to try, the offense might score some more points. You know, I certainly wouldn't be surprised if they won it, but I do kind of, again, it's not like the Dolphins are going to be throwing anyway, so the weather is going to be kind of, a bit neutralized because both teams are going to be relying on the run game more. So I'll go ahead and I'll say something I like, Dolphins 27, Bills 24. Like, it's going to be pretty painful. Like, it's going to be close. And there's definitely going to be, like, some of the games we need going our way, like, going our way in the fourth quarter. And then, you know, this one, like, something bad happens in this game, and then the flash comes up on the scoreboard that, you know, whoever won, Houston won, or whoever we need to win, I don't even know or care who needs to win. I know it's too many teams. Like, whatever didn't happen, didn't happen. And then the air kind of goes out of the stadium and we lose. So that's kind of, I see that as Sunday afternoon. Or right. Wait, Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, Saturday afternoon.
Is it Saturday?
Yeah.
Saturday game. Yeah.
Right.
Merry Christmas Eve.
There are games on Sunday too, but it's a Saturday game. Just
The Bills win in both Houston and Tennessee, if one of those two teams loses, then you got to frickin' follow the games on Sunday, unfortunately. So looking at the, I'm inclined to agree with both of you guys to a degree. Dolphins are a beatable team. I do not think they put up nearly the rushing numbers they did in the first game, even if they are successful. I think adding Darius back to the equation does help the Bills cause in that regard, as long as Kyle can get in there and be some semblance of Kyle. But at the same time, I think that, you know, Pittsburgh exposed a lot of weaknesses on this Bills team, and this Dolphins team was able to expose weaknesses in the Steelers that the Bills could not take advantage of. Now, of course, everyone loses to and beats teams that the other team couldn't during the course of a year, for the most part, when you're talking about teams who've won a total of 16 games at this point. But I just feel that the Dolphins are, you know, slightly better, slightly further along, more to play for. The Bills, you know, they're coming. They have not been, every time the Bills have been tested this year in kind of a big game scenario, they have, you know, come out on the opposite end. And I think that's going to be the difficulty this week. I'm going to combine your scores and say 27-23 Dolphins in this one.
Actually, if you combined our scores, it would have been like,
oh yeah, 50, it'd been like 50 to 43.
Right. But I take your meaning. Okay. Well, if that happens, you'll be able to tweet us at bbillsmny or email us bbillsmny@gmail.com. You'll be sure to hear about it on our podcast, Buffalo Bills Maybe Next Year, which you can Google. You can
and it's plug number
it
five.
iTunes. Number five.
Find the official Bills one with John Murphy, Bills and Beers, Rock Power Report, the one that we refuse to name, and then up.
Well, we had been refusing to name, but you know.
Right.
I
just feel like they came out of nowhere. That is why I feel like I tip my cap to the other ones, because like they've been around for longer than us or close to as long as us. You know,
they're the
Yeah.
They're the Dak Prescott. They suck. So Twitter, email, facebook.com/bbillsmny, where you can leave comments on our posts and our podcasts, and we'll read them live on the air and, well, you know, record them live on the air and discuss them. That's about it for this week. We wish everyone a very Merry Christmas, a Happy Hanukkah, a Happy Kwanzaa, which starts on Monday. And if you're just not celebrating anything or any of these things anyway, we hope you have a very nice weekend. We hope it's a very nice time for you. We will be celebrating with our families, and we will record sometime next week. Either the season will be over or we will be discussing the insane playoff possibilities that the Bills would need to happen. But until then, thank you so much for listening. Take care. My name is Frank.
I'm Scott.
I'm Paul.
Have a good night, everyone.